Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
My favorite broadcaster on sports, soccer, college football, it's John Strong, Fox Sports, play-by-play, formerly of this radio show. I noticed the crowd noise at the NFL games. John Strong is with us. As a broadcaster, Mr. John Strong, how much does that crowd noise affect a broadcast, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, I don't know what it means to have football in my holster, but it sounds like something I should seek medical treatment for if it persists for 4 hours or more. It's an interesting question because, you know, we experienced that at the MLS's back tournament starting in the summer, and I actually requested to have that fake crowd noise in my headset because it gives you energy, or more accurately, if you're in a stadium and there's no crowd there at all, it zaps all your energy. And certainly if you're in a situation, it looked like all the NFL announcers were on site at the stadium. I know it was more of a mix with college football Saturday, who was on site and who was either in the studio or in some cases in their home. But that's sort of doubly so, that it sucks your energy away. And so even though you know it's fake, just to have something there, I do think just sort of helps amp you up a little bit. And it's between that and, you know, I know Fox has been working on the virtual crowd, which we've seen in baseball. I know they were testing it on, I think it was the Bears-Lions game over the weekend. I mean, things like that just to, it's like a comfort blanket. You know what I mean? If you tune into a sporting event and it's dead silent and you don't see any fans in the stadium, it almost makes you uncomfortable, you know, because we're so used to that. And it is a reminder, as much as television drives so much of what professional and collegiate sports are, because that's where all the money comes from, or at least most of it. This all serves as a continued reminder of how vitally important to sporting events, and even to watching sporting events on television, the fans in the stands really are.
John Strong with us, Fox Sports, play-by-play. 49ers-Cardinals games, camera angles were really tight. They couldn't help but show the goalpost shot with the cutouts behind it. When they did a wide shot, they really talked about the fact that, you know, there's nobody in the stadium. It was a really wide shot, like that Goodyear blimp shot. But what bothered me was, like, you know, when I expected there to be a murmur in the crowd or a little roar or a boo at the officials making a personal foul call against the home team, it just wasn't there, and I noticed it. It was distracting me.
Yeah, and it's... Now, I did not watch the afternoon games as closely. I was watching the morning games, and in the afternoon yesterday, I was down in my office getting some work done for our game Wednesday night. But, you know, one of the things that we've seen is you can, with the fake crowd noise, and listen, the crew that we have that's been working on soccer for us, and I know they've been trying to get them to work on other sports for Fox. I mean, these guys are high-end. The guy that runs it runs the sound production for the Hollywood Bowl, has been involved in some high-level, you know, music production. I mean, these are guys who really get it, and they've got some serious equipment. And you can play in soccer, you know, crowd chants and songs. You can press the button for a cheer. You can press the button for a boo. But it's hard to get those timings right sometimes, and it's hard to also, you know, what's the appropriate sound for, in soccer, a shot that hits the post? What's the appropriate sound for in football, an incomplete, where the guy's wide open and the pass is sailed beyond him? You know, how do you quite match that? It's really difficult to do. And so that's where, yeah, it provides some level of comfort blanket, but it's never going to really ever approach the emotional, visceral reaction to all these moments in between the very obvious, you know, yay, that happened, or boo, that happened.
John Strong with us, the voice of American soccer, among other things, soon to be the voice of American football. John, let me ask you, the for years, broadcasts were done, you know, even you could go back to the 1950s in baseball where they had two pieces of wood, they hit it together, the crack of the bat, crack, you know, and then they would simulate the game using a ticker tape or whatever. But you know, we got used to having the broadcasters in the stadium. What is the advantage, disadvantage, the feel from a broadcaster's seat when you aren't there? Maybe you're in a studio somewhere else.
I think this is an incredibly fascinating conversation. Now, I think sometimes, you know, does the average viewer at home know? Does the average viewer at home really care? But it is interesting, as you've had this proliferation of websites like Awful Announcing, or you have different writers who have sort of taken on these roles of being media critics. And so there's more conversation about these types of things, because you're right. In the early days, any time a baseball team was on the road, it was a reproduction. And any of the big, you know, guys like Vin Scully and Harry Carey, the legends of baseball broadcasting, all worked for a certain time reproducing radio broadcasts, as you mentioned, using fake sound effects. They're reading a ticker tape. So if anything, we've sort of come full circle, that we have more and more broadcasters now working in a studio instead of in the stadium. In American sports, it's very strange, because it's a very rare thing to have the announcers not at the stadium or in the arena, and it's been seen as an example of cost-cutting and an example of the business model failing in broadcasting and cord-cutting, all these sorts of things. Globally, it's very much the industry standard. When you watch an Olympics, 90% of the play-by-play of the events is being done from NBC's facility in Stamford, Connecticut, which is basically like a gigantic IKEA that they've set up to run broadcasting. I've called games that have been played on six continents for Fox in my 8 years working for them, and 90% of them, certainly the ones not in the U.S., have been done from one of two studio facilities in Los Angeles. Think about any big soccer game when Real Madrid plays Barcelona and it's broadcast in 200 countries. Not all 200 countries worth of broadcasters have sent their announcers to the stadium. Now, to your point about it is a performance art, because you lose a natural amount of adrenaline energy because you're not there amongst the crowd. That was something I learned early on. You have to amplify your own energy, even if it feels like it seems ridiculous that you're shouting so much in a cavernous studio. You have to do that to match how you would sound if you were there. You also have to account for what you cannot see. And that, again, is a learned skill. I can't necessarily see whether the flag is up for offside. I can't necessarily see what the referee has pointed or what he has signaled when he's blown his whistle. I was watching, it was the Iowa State versus Louisiana game Saturday, the early game on ESPN. And there was a situation where you had both announcers were not there. One was at his home in Atlanta. The other, the analyst Mike Golick, was in Bristol. And it was one of those situations where the guy's reaching for the goal line, the ball pops out, another teammate picks it up, he tries to get over the goal line, and the camera shot is so tight, you can't see the officials. So you can't see what the call is on the field. And both announcers were completely lost in that moment. They didn't know what to say or what to do. In the stadium, you could see what the call is and be able to talk through that. And so you learn how to basically sort of tap dance for a second or two or longer until you can figure out what has happened. Then you can sort of talk about that to the viewer, because the risk is, this is another thing I was taught, the worst thing is to guess and then get it wrong and to say touchdown and then 5 seconds later, oh, never mind, he was actually down. And that becomes a really difficult thing to adjust to. And it's a big adjustment for a lot of these football announcers that are doing this for the first time.
John Strong with us, Fox Sports play-by-play. What was it like for you after a time off to get back calling a game?
Similar to the guys getting back playing games right now. Similar to a lot of the drop passes and blown coverages we saw in football over the weekend. When you get out of a rhythm doing it, it takes time to pick it back up. And this was different than even an off-season, where, okay, I'm not calling games for 3 months, but there's sort of, I don't know, there's just a weird psychological difference in everybody starting from scratch and you work your way in, where we all felt horribly rusty for the first couple of weeks doing it in July, and we started to sort of figure it out a little bit. There's going to be a change for me even this week, so our next game is Wednesday night. Timbers are at San Jose on FS1, and this is the first time I'm going to be doing the play-by-play from Portland. I had been the last couple of weeks flying down to L.A., basically because our attempt to work something out in Portland didn't work, and so we just sort of, let's just not worry about it now. And we've been able to revisit it with 10 days between games, and so it's going to be another adjustment for me. I'm going to be in a sort of a makeshift studio facility, sort of just down the street, actually, from Providence Park. Stu, my analyst, is going to be in the studio in L.A. Alexi, who's part of the broadcast as well for these, will be in L.A. So not only am I calling games off monitor, but now I'm not in the same room as Stu, and I'm using sort of a camera connection to have some sort of eye contact and, you know, adjusting to sort of being that much more isolated. And so it does. It makes you sort of, again, a lot like the players. If you're not necessarily sharp and fresh and dialed in the moment, you're that much more sort of digging into, you know, your hardwired old habits of how you learned how to do it, and sort of try to build that continuity on your own as you get into it. But it definitely, it takes time. It's going to take football teams. It's all well and good to sit here and say they need 6 weeks of practice. You still need some time, whether it's because you lost preseason in the NFL or because you were just doing nothing as a college football player. It's still going to be a couple of games before it really starts to resemble what we have come to expect. That's what we've seen in every single sport.
What do you make of the balance between, hey, we want everyone to stay safe, we really don't know the long-term health effects of those who do test positive, versus, damn it, these are professionals, they're under contract, they got to get back to work? How do you balance that?
Well, your phraseology is interesting there, because it speaks to one of the real issues right now, which is college football, because you can do that. I mean, it's not dissimilar from concussions, where there's a level at which you can sort of justify in your own mind, hey, everyone's getting paid, everyone understands the risks, everyone has signed on for it. We've had individual players in the NFL come out and say, I'm well aware of the long-term health risks, but I have a short window in my career, and I'm going to maximize my opportunity, make as much money as I can. And those are grown adults making those decisions. And in saying that, all of us, with football in particular, have, over the last 5-10 years, as concussions, CTE, all these different elements of it have become more prevalent and well-known, we've all made some sort of a negotiation in our mind with what our comfort level is or is not with regards to the game. College football is a whole other can of beans. When you're talking about kids, and they are, I'm a firm believer, having gone through this fairly recently, you're not an adult till your mid-20s, at least. And so these are kids, and they're not getting paid. And, you know, we're asking them to do all, it was already sort of a messed up system, and now triply so. And listening to calls in the last segment, you know, and it's not just whether or not they're playing. There's so much money affected in it. There's so many jobs that are affected by it. There's so much of our, you know, what this has come to remind us is how important sports are to the social fabric of our lives. So many, any of us listening to this radio station, sports are a big part of our lives. And for a lot of us, you and I, sports are how we provide for our family. And it becomes difficult in these moments to really know what the right answer is. I mean, I struggle with that with soccer of, you know, I don't want to force these guys to play, but if they're not playing, at a certain point, I'm not providing for my family now. And it just, this whole pandemic and sort of how it has unfolded has really created some awkward situations at best and some really awful situations at worst of the role that sports plays and sort of how we approach whether or not the athletes, who at the end of the day, they're the ones that are the most important element to this equation, should be on the field or not at all, and in what scenario and with what sort of, you know, procedures or protocols around them.
John Strong, Wednesday night, Timbers against San Jose on Fox. Is that where we're going to see you next?
FS1, Wednesday night, 6:30 p.m.
Thank you, sir, for making time for us, and I wish you the best. Stay safe.
You as well. Good to talk to you, bud.
There's John Strong, Fox Sports play-by-play. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. Every day on the show, we do our big splash. It is the one thing that you need to know, and today's no different.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where?
Down there.
Must be the big splash.
Well, I don't know if you were surprised by Tom Brady's performance in week one, but Buccaneers coach Bruce Arians said today that he was surprised that Tom Brady struggled in his debut with the Bucs on Sunday. Brady threw two picks, including a pick six, in a 34-23 loss. Arians said he looked like Tom Brady in practice, so it's unusual to see that in a ball game. I thought of something there that I hadn't considered before. I've been focused a lot on what Brady was going to look like, what the Patriots are going to look like, but I hadn't considered that if Brady looks bad, how it would reflect on Bruce Arians, the Buccaneers coach. Is he the one that ends up losing here? Brady.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.